Hello and welcome to Conduit Conversations, bringing you pioneers at the cutting edge of social change. I'm Paul Finsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. This episode is part of a special Ralph Lauren Cancer Conversations mini-series. Ralph Lauren has been a leader in work to support the research and treatment for cancer for over 30 years, establishing the Ralph Lauren Center for Cancer Care in 2003 in New York City, and partnering with the Royal Marsden in the UK to develop a world-class breast cancer research facility. Most recently, Ralph Lauren has committed to supporting the Royal Marsden Cancer Charity in funding a research zone within a state-of-the-art new cancer facility opening in Sutton, the Oak Cancer Center. Throughout this series, we will invite people touched by cancer to share their stories. We will also be delving into the science behind cancer research, the role of technology in early detection and prevention, and how innovative collaborations in cancer research and philanthropy can achieve amazing results.
Personalized care for patients along with precision medicine means the best personalization of care in the best facilities as well as the best drug, radiotherapy or surgical treatment. All those things matter to people's ability to cope at a very vulnerable time in their lives.
My guest today is Kelly Palmer, Chief Executive of the Royal Marsden NHS Foundation Trust. Kelly became Chief Executive of the Royal Marsden in 1998. She is also a trustee of the Royal Marsden Cancer Charity. Kelly was awarded a CBE in 2006 for her contribution to the NHS. She was appointed a National Cancer Director for NHS England in 2015 and holds this position alongside her role as Chief Executive of the Royal Marsden. Kelly, welcome.
Thank you, Paul.
So tell us how you first became involved in cancer research, treatment and care, and where your journey began.
I've worked for the National Health Service my entire professional career. And my first chief executive role was actually here at the Royal Marsden. So I've been here for a while. The environment is fascinating. And I've seen really an explosion of our knowledge and understanding about better ways of researching, treating and curing cancer in the time that I've spent here. So it's a privilege to be a part of it.
So the Royal Marsden has a distinctive methodology or approach to tackling cancer. And I'd love to hear it from the person who's at the very top. Tell us what's distinctive about what you do.
So the Royal Marsden only treats cancer. We're one of the world's specialist cancer centres. And as such, we're part of a global network of hospitals with a big research output, trying to improve survival, extend life, and really importantly, extend quality of life for patients around the world. So we treat patients here in London, but we also undertake research of global significance so that we can improve survival, largely through earlier detection and optimal treatment and care of patients.
One of the things we've heard on this series and speaking to people who've had the great privilege of being treated at the Royal Marsden is that there's this interplay between research and treatment, between sort of academia and practitioners, as it were. And that's, at least in their experience, has been something that they've placed an enormous amount of value in. I suspect there's also an enormous amount of therapeutic value in combining those two approaches.
What's really important for patients is to be able to be at the heart of a centre of excellence for cancer care with access to, here we run over 900 clinical trials at any one time, so patients have access to innovative new therapies and trials. And we also ensure that the work we do through our trials, we can roll out into routine healthcare as quickly as possible. So having researchers and patients and clinicians together on one site makes a huge difference to our ability to accelerate the best care for all those that we treat.
Are some of those clinical trials pushing new frontiers in cancer research? And in some ways, they're unproven, but they're the things that could lead to the great breakthroughs. But on the other hand, from a patient point of view, it gives you great hope, but also some degree of uncertainty. So tell us about that, sort of what it's like to be part of a clinical trial at the time that you're also receiving your treatment.
Yeah. So it's very important that patients are properly informed when they join a trial. The trial is, as its name shows, the trial is looking at innovative new ways to either diagnose or treat someone. It's about improving care for patients in the future, as well as carefully managing the care of that individual who's going through the trial. I'm surprised that so many of our patients want to be in a trial, because they feel it's really important to try and contribute to improved survival for others in the future. But operating in a trial environment really means that we need a really close relationship between bench and bedside. So we have scientists, we have clinicians delivering care, we have expert nursing, and they need to make sure that they provide absolutely the right care to each patient. And for some patients, a trial isn't appropriate, but those who want to go on a trial and for whom that represents the best opportunity for improved outcomes, we can provide that for them. So it's a very careful management job, really, to make sure that we give each and every patient the right care for their particular cancer, but also their particular individual response to treatment.
I know you also play a prominent role in policy and government work in addition to your executive role here at the Royal Marsden. Tell us a little bit about what government is currently doing in the field of cancer, where you think it's doing interesting stuff, where you think there is perhaps more work to be done.
Yeah, so we're really lucky to have the National Health Service because so it's a sort of countrywide service so that we can try and make sure all patients have access to high quality care. And currently, the government have invested very significantly in cancer over the next 5 years. So there's a long-term plan for cancer. And at the heart of it is, first of all, much earlier detection, when generally you can improve cure and certainly quality of life for patients post-treatment. So sort of big work in earlier detection. And then secondly, making sure that every patient has optimal treatment and care and we can get rid of unwanted variation across the country. So we need to make sure everyone has access to the best care. And so the National Cancer Strategy is about early detection, optimal treatment and care, and equality of access to care. And again, it's a real privilege to be part of that, and to have funding and political support behind it is brilliant.
Where do you think the most interesting breakthroughs in early detection are likely to be? I mean, are we in science or AI or all of these sort of revolutions in technology that are occurring? Are we beginning to see the promise of that help with early detection?
We are. So there's both technical and service model changes that need to happen. I'll give you one example. So in the national program, for lung cancer in this country, we tend to detect late when we can't cure. And so we've, in 10 areas around the country where there are high levels of lung cancer mortality, we are putting scanning trucks in supermarket car parks to take services to places that are convenient for local people, to scan people and pick up cancers early. And in the first pilot that we ran, this one was Manchester, so this is through the national programme, we changed, we were getting about 14% of patients at an early stage of cancer when we could cure. And then we were picking up 80% of patients at an early stage. So you can see the degree of difference in terms of trying to improve survival. And if we get that right across the country, we could save thousands more lives. And it's a simple thing to do, to take services to people to make it super convenient and for modern life. So there are sort of service changes you can do like that. Equally, I think the world of AI and technological change means that we can both diagnose and manage disease burden much more accurately. I was talking to one of our radiologists at the Royal Marsden the other week, and I said, how many images do you have? She's doing some research work using deep machine learning to look at images of disease. And she said, I've got 2,000 images for one patient. And she uses deep machine learning to really analyze all that data quickly and efficiently so she can make sure the patient's management is completely optimal for that person. But, you know, the degree of data handling can obviously be much speeded up with machine learning and AI. So really exciting things happening in that field too.
Forgive me for a kind of geeky question, but one of the things that we've looked at in other episodes is certain careers or jobs are being eroded or made redundant by AI. And One of them that's constantly referred to as radiology, because in some ways, if you feed in 2,000 images, you can start getting through AI much better detection of what looks like a cancerous lesion than just the trained eye, and it's also quicker. But it strikes me that what that does is sort of cause radiologists to have to upskill or adjust or perhaps use their training in different and more uniquely human ways. Is that something that you're seeing, that the profession is having to shift and adapt but become potentially more powerful and more innovative, or are you just having less radiologists because AI is doing the work for it?
No, so we're not there yet in terms of sort of the spread of AI across health services. But if you speak to the clinicians here, they'll say to you, it's fantastic for patients to get the degree of data analysed quickly and efficiently through AI. But you always want a human being to grade the cancer and to make sure that human judgment is applied, because these decisions are incredibly important in terms of making sure the patient does the best they can be, you know, that does absolutely the best they can following treatment. So I think it's the best of both worlds, if I can dodge the question that way. I think AI, fantastic, but you need that human expertise to grade cancer and to adjust treatment regimes appropriately for each and every patient.
So all of this remarkable care requires funding. We are privileged enough to live in a country where government plays an important role in providing it, but there's always more that can be done through philanthropy. And I know the Ralph Lauren's Pink Pony campaign has supported Royal Marsden's efforts. Tell us a little bit about that and the role of philanthropy in enhancing what you do.
Yeah, thank you. So Ralph Lauren have been really generous supporters of the Royal Marsden, and particularly our work in breast cancer research, which is extensive. And the level of support they've given us over a number of years really means we can accelerate the work that we do. And it allowed us to build the Ralph Lauren Centre for Breast Cancer Research here at the Royal Marsden in Chelsea, which has really recently published some really fantastic results in terms of improving the way of diagnosing and treating cancer accurately, again, to improve outcomes. So the Pink Pony campaign and Ralph Lauren have a store just up the road. So it's a close neighbourly collection. And with the corporation internationally, they've been incredibly generous supporters. And essentially, it means we can go further, faster, in better modern facilities than we'd be able to do without that support. So we can improve the benefit for patients globally a lot faster and more extensively than we would otherwise do. So very important funders of our research. And philanthropy generally, I think, including the generous support from Ralph Lauren Corporation, does two things. So the further, faster through their funding, but it also raises awareness of our work. And that's important to really involve other supporters across the world, as well as here in the UK. So both are actually really important. And the Royal Marsden was actually founded by a Victorian philanthropist. So since our very early days, we've had philanthropic support throughout our 170-year history. And that really has made a difference to our impact for patients worldwide. So it's really precious.
I know you're setting up the Oak Cancer Centre, and this is a new endeavour and a new initiative. Tell us a little about what it will achieve and what will you be able to do there that you wouldn't otherwise have been able to do without it.
So the Oak Cancer Centre is a 5-storey building. It'll be very elegant Scandi design for patients. So that's brilliant. But on a serious note of content, it'll have 400 researchers in all kinds of research into cancer, including breast cancer, will come together in a building with patients. So as you said earlier, bringing patients and researchers together is incredibly important. So having clinicians, researchers, patients in one location, able to sort of harness the collaborations that exist between the delivery of care and research into better delivery of care, will really allow us to do far more than we do currently. So we'll have 400 researchers on one of the floors. We will have a new early detection suite, so our rapid diagnostic centre. We already do a lot of early diagnosis in breast cancer, but we'll extend that to other cancers so that we can help improve cure and quality of life for people. And it will almost double our capacity to deal with ambulatory care patients, so outpatients and day care. And that's really important because we want to be there for everyone who needs us. So really modern facilities, researchers together with patients, new early detection capability, and you know, a fantastic facility that will see us into the future with the best modern cancer care. So it's a fantastic development.
I want to ask you a question. You, in describing the building, sort of said with a smile that it had modern Scandi design. And part of that must be not just a vanity project. It must be informed a little bit by a growing body of research that kind of a biophilic approach where people's well-being is taken into account and that people's emotional and psychological attitude towards treatment, that you don't walk into an austere wing that makes you feel as though you're in some prison, that you're in somewhere that's welcoming and warm. So the question I want to ask is, do we have solid empirical evidence that people's well-being, psychologically at least, or aesthetically or from a biophilic perspective, affects their survival rates or the treatment outcomes in cancer?
It's a difficult area, and I can't quote you individual research. So there have been a number of areas of research, but what I can tell you from my own experience of working with patients over many years is the best cancer care is the best technical care. It's equally the best personalization of care, because giving patients confidence about the quality of care in an environment that feels warm and welcoming, is clean, and in a sort of clean design, is incredibly important. So having trees around the building, being able to look out from beautiful windows when you're having your chemotherapy treatment, these things all matter. So personalized care for patients along with precision medicine means the best personalization of care in the best facilities, as well as the best drug, radiotherapy or surgical treatment. All those things matter to people's ability to cope at a very vulnerable time in their lives. And patients say when they come to the Royal Marsden, and they say, you know, we feel comfortable because everyone else is going through the same journey. It feels like a club. It might not be a club everyone wants to join, but we feel supported. And that is to do with the way they're treated by staff, and very importantly, to do with facilities and layout and design of a building. And this is our opportunity to get it right at Sutton, which is sort of built in the 1960s. And this is a big new footprint of important modern design for patients.
You said something about precision medicine, and I presume you were referring there to much greater targeting of treatment, because historically cancer treatments have been a little bit of a kind of blunderbuss approach that you just, you know, try and shoot wherever you think there may be carcinogens. But in fact, we can now target more effectively and therefore improve outcomes, but also cause less ancillary damage. Tell us some fun facts about precision
treatments. Fun facts. So whichever treatment modality you look at, it's all about precision. So in surgery, it's robotic surgery. So you've got multiple arms doing very precise, minimally invasive techniques for patients. So fast recovery, low blood loss. These robots can, the fun fact is, you can peel the skin off a grape with them with exquisite precision. And can you imagine what that's like compared to just using two hands of a human? So that's robotic surgery. Precision treatment in radiotherapy. The Royal Marsden is trialling something called the MR-Linac. It puts the best modern scanning technology together with radiotherapy delivery, so you can precisely target the patient's tumour and avoid damaging healthy tissue. And the moonshot there is, it is a little way off, but is to diagnose, treat and cure on the same day because of the precision of the delivery. So we're trialling this new technology, scanning and radiotherapy. And then in drug treatment and immunotherapy, it's about precision medicine that targets, you know, cancers can be many different types and they can respond very differently to treatment depending on the individual's genetic makeup. And immunotherapy using the immune system and modern chemotherapy is about this exquisite targeting so that you're avoiding toxic side effects as far as possible. So better recovery, better experience, and better cure, and better outcomes overall. So those are all the fun facts that I can give you in a nutshell on precision. But it's so exciting for patients that we've got rid of this one size fits all, and we can do this really targeted treatment these days. And I've seen that just in the last sort of 2 or 3 years has been huge, huge advances, and it's really wonderful to be a part of it.
I'm going to ask another metaphor question, which is, some ways cancer treatment can be a little bit like target shooting, right? So you've got to get more and more accurate. You take your bow and arrow and you make sure you're always hitting the bullseye as opposed to out of the bullseye. Some of the targeting can actually try and do a self-guided arrow. By that, I mean you actually take the medicine or the treatment to actually find the carcinogens, and it only... And is that actually happening? Are we beginning to see fruits in that regard as well?
Well, we are. And in fact, one of our clinicians who works between the Royal Marsden and our academic partner, the Institute of Cancer Research, has just published a study into using, I'm using his word here, microbubbles to more accurately deliver the targeted chemotherapy in the right way to the right. So there are all sorts of interesting delivery mechanisms that people are looking at to improve the targeting. So again, a very exciting area of clinical advance.
Wow. The next 5 to 10 years of the Royal Marsden, you were obviously a planner. You've been at the head of the institution for a long time. What do you want to see happen over the next 5 to 10 years?
So I think over the next 5 to 10 years, increasingly we'll have a larger proportion of patients who we cure, a larger proportion of patients who we may not cure, but have long-term remission. We're already seeing through work that's done at the Royal Marsden, patients with advanced melanoma, so advanced skin cancer, who would have died within 9 months, surviving for 5, with great quality of life, living well. So much more of that, cure and long-term remission, and just carrying on contributing globally to the improvement in survival for patients through having a really high quality research workforce and excellent clinical treatment and care. We always have building projects, so the Oak Centre is here and now. We will have further projects, and that is about giving patients and the staff who look after them the best possible facilities for delivering this really high quality care.
And what aspects of your work historically are you most proud of? You know, if you look back now and say you've been at the helm of something for 2 decades, what are the things that you look back and say, you know, these were remarkable results?
I think for me, I'm not a clinician, so I am enabling clinicians and researchers to do what they do best. And some of my sort of proud moments, so apart from recruiting some of the world's finest people, to improve survival. One of my proud moments is opening a drug development unit. We did that from scratch, and we had a brilliant team, and they were responsible for developing the latest drug in use worldwide for men with advanced prostate cancer, and it was done really fast. It was done within about 6 years, which is very fast for a new drug to come into worldwide use. So the opportunity to do things like creating a tissue bank, setting up a drug development unit, trialling the new MR-Linac that I mentioned earlier, those are the things I'm really proud of, and hiring brilliant staff. Then alongside that, having the kind of support we have from Ralph Lauren and other great philanthropists and philanthropic organisations, it's a joy, actually, because it means that we can do so much more. And just to have that support, that profile raising, as well as the philanthropic funding, really is a source of sort of joy and privilege, really, in being able to do more for patients. So just a few. I can give you many examples, but those are just a few.
I'm going to ask a final question, which is about leadership. It's in today's world where leaders come and go, you have endured, and you've endured at the top of an internationally recognized institution that delivers real excellence. Give us a few of your general leadership philosophies, but also tips, words of advice to other leaders who are leading large and complex institutions.
So not in any order of importance, but one is it's never about you, it's about the team. So it's very important that it's not a cult of an individual leader, and it's about your team and creating and managing continuously a team with a strong track record with confidence. I think that's really important. It's clearly very important to be resilient. I'm a stayer, otherwise, I wouldn't have been here as long as I have, but it has been a wonderful experience being at the Royal Marsden because of the advances for patients that I've been able to be a part of. So the team thing's important, resilience important. I think my job is to very much to enable others. So it's understanding where I fit in, understanding what their objectives are, and making sure I can meet those successfully. And then someone once said to me, one of the doctors once said to me, which I've always remembered, they said to me, "We don't always like your decisions, but you do make decisions and we know you're fair." So it's people having trust in you and you being able to demonstrate through your track record and behaviours that you're open, transparent, approachable, firm, and you will deliver results. And so people trust you ultimately. I think that's really important too. So not in any order of importance, but just some of my life lessons from having been here. And hiring brilliant people is clearly really important too. I put a lot of time and effort into hiring great clinicians and great staff.
Kelly Palmer, thank you so much for a masterclass in how to build institutions that diagnose and treat cancer, something that's touches all too many of us and something that's very, very, very important. So thank you for your work and thank you for the Royal Marsden and everything that it does both in the UK and in the rest of the world.
Thanks very much, Paul. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ralph Lauren Cancer Conversations mini-series, produced in collaboration with the Royal Marsden Cancer Charity and recorded mostly at The Conduit. Feel free to subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. For more information on The Conduit and our community of changemakers, please visit theconduit.com. To learn more about Pink Pony 2019 campaign, Ralph Lauren's global initiative in the fight against cancer, visit ralphlauren.co.uk/pinkpony. And to learn more about the Royal Marsden Cancer Charity, visit royalmarsden.org.